everybody. Ben Starr here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm joined, as always, by Kevin O'Donohue, the director of the Positive Mind Center here on West 57th Street. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Ben. Good to be here.
So today's a big day.
Yeah.
Well, it's Thanksgiving Eve.
Right.
And this is a big night in America, Kevin. This is one of the largest times for traveling nationwide.
Oh, yeah.
The travel groups who monitor the statistics and the numbers of people who intend to travel, who have made travel plans across the board, they're all showing a big increase this year in holiday travelers for Thanksgiving. As many as 50 million Americans are going to be on the move. And they're going to be on the move to reunite with family, loved ones, and friends across the country.
What a year for family get-together.
Absolutely. And tonight, Thanksgiving Eve, is also significant because it's a very, very big night for drunk driving and DUI arrests.
Mm-hmm.
So I would ask people to be safe out there, not drink and drive, and just really be careful, be safe.
Take a taxi.
It's a good idea. And I think that's part of that, Kevin, is that people are home for the holidays. They're reuniting with friends that they, you know, they may have grown up with, people they miss, family. Yeah. And this is kind of like the Friends Thanksgiving Wednesday night before Thanksgiving.
Right. Friendsgiving.
Friendsgiving. Sure.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's such a big celebration because of the day after is the Thanksgiving, and people run into their families during these Thanksgiving, and that is a huge stress for many, many, many people.
Big time.
And so, you know, people go crazy the night before as a sort of way to get prepared to sit down with family. Actually sit down, be quiet, or be still, be who you're expected to be, and be peaceful and
celebrate.
It's a
good point. Yeah, it's a good point, Kevin. I mean, there's a lot of stress that comes with family gatherings. And I think certainly after the year that we've all lived, more than ever, I think there's going to be a lot of tension and a lot of stress at a lot of the Thanksgiving family tables out there tomorrow night.
I wonder if there'll be like a rule by the hosts. No politics. I mean, because anything could set a dining room table on fire like politics.
Well, it's a good place to start, Kevin. But, you know, one thing that I was really interested in that we were talking about just the other day was the idea of how families as a unit interact with each other and the culture within a family. It's like a microculture within the greater culture, right?
Absolutely.
What is that culture for each individual family? And how does it affect the individuals within that family? It's something that is really worth taking a look. And we found a lot of great information. And we even found a great piece from the archives that we're going to share with you with Armand DeMille's take on family systems.
Yes, and that piece is going to be all about balance. How does a family maintain its balance? I'm sure this celebration tomorrow, the hosts want balance. They do not want, controversy, criticism, hostility, anything breaking out over the table. So it's all about balance. And Armand talks about Murray Boehm, who devised this family systems therapy. And he looked at families to decide, to determine what is it that keeps the family in balance? What is it that threatens that balance? How do people adjust when the balance is threatened? And, it's really based on the idea of a vacuum. When something happens traumatic or dysfunctional in a family, somebody rushes in to fill the vacuum. And so when people come for therapy, for family therapy, we're on guard. We're looking for who's filling the vacuum? What caused the vacuum? What caused this to go out of balance? And so no matter how big or how small the family is, people filling roles. And family therapy is finding what the roles are, who's living which roles, and when do these roles get threatened.
Definitely.
And how do we get them back in balance?
Roles are a really important thing that we should get into. We're going to talk about some specific roles, and maybe you'll identify with some or others. But, yeah. You know, they're just from a Thanksgiving perspective, right? I can think of two kind of interesting roles. You have the cooks,
yeah.
And you have the buyers, right? You have the people who spend all day
right.
really pouring their heart into yeah. a big Thanksgiving spread.
Right.
Sweating over a stove or an oven.
Yeah.
And, you know, putting love into it and doing everything they can to get it just right, you know, and they're timing the turkey and the stuffing and this side dish and that dessert.
Yeah.
And they're it's all got to be impeccably timed so that it all comes together at the end, right, to
yep.
serve. And then sure. you have the buyers, you know, the people who it's less important for them to be a part of that process. And they say, yeah, you know, I'll stop by and get a pumpkin pie.
Mm.
I'll pick it up
yeah.
and bring it over. That'll be my contribution.
Right.
Right. And that's two different kind of roles you can take. And I'm just on a superficial level.
Sure.
Using the Thanksgiving example. But we're going to get into some deeper roles and some roles that may be more difficult to live for those who are in them.
Yeah.
But we wanted to share with you this piece on family systems theory.
By the way, are you a buyer or are you a cook?
So my family is kind of a mix of both.
Okay.
Yeah, there's usually homemade food and there's usually some store-bought things too.
Yeah, mine too. And, you know, it just occurs to me, both are necessary. You know, we need the buyers to show up with the pumpkin pie and sometimes the case of beer or the wine or all sorts of different things. So we do need both. I tend to be a buyer because as a kid, I wasn't like invited into the kitchen to cook. And so I learned, okay, my contribution will be. Oh.
This is how I can contribute.
Yeah. And so I'm part of the glue too. Both necessary, but not a chance to express my love. So
family systems theory is what we want to start talking about. It was devised by Murray Bowen, who was a psychiatrist and a psychiatry professor,
yeah.
and it's really interesting stuff. We found a great piece from the archives that we'd like to share with you that we got a lot of great feedback last week about the piece that we brought to you last week, and so we wanted to bring you another one this week. We found a nice one. So here it is. And remember, you know, we love to get your feedback. You can always contact us here at positivemind@wbai.org. That's positivemind@wbai.org. And you can call us here at the center, 212-757-4488. Take a listen.
And here's what I began thinking about. I began thinking about a very old concept called family systems theory. Now, family systems theory relates to you, your current relationships, why you're feeling good being married, not married, your friendships, and your relationship with your family. So it's worth paying attention to. Murray Bowen. Can I take that name in vain? Murray Bowen was a smart man. He studied family systems. According to him, a family is a system in which each member has a role to play and rules to respect. Let's just start with that concept, a family. Each member has role to play and rules to respect. So, one role to play, daddy. Another role to play, mommy. Another role to play, sister, but maybe older sister. Another role to play, younger sister. Another role to play, daddy's favorite. Another role to play, mommy's favorite. Another role to play, youngest kid. Another role to play, troubled child. Another role to play, the supreme child, the one who achieves, the achiever, the I'm proud of you kid. Another role to play, the daddy who comes home drunk. These are all roles, and they're all roles, and each person has a role to play, and when you get the family together, each person collaborates on the role. So if Daddy's never home, and let's say he's out working at night, and Mommy is there at home, and you have an older son, and the older son and Mommy's not too happy with Daddy, the family system works like this. Daddy's on the outside, Mommy's on the inside. The son goes up and fills in half of Mommy's position, and, you know, he's now next to Mommy, and he's close to Mommy. Therefore, when his father comes home, he has a little antagonistic relationship with his father, slight that it might be. The daughter, meanwhile, misses her daddy, and she becomes close to daddy, and she becomes friends with daddy. And the roles are so prescribed, it keeps a balance. Everybody is the way they are. If Mommy and Daddy decide to go on a vacation together and leave the kids behind, the kids get shaken up. Because where's my role? What am I supposed to be doing? If the kids leave the home, we have a thing called the empty nest syndrome. The parents don't know what to do because they're missing the system. Now, systems theory accounts for this in a very interesting dynamic way, and let me take it a little further. I used to work with some people from Bellevue who were working with the children of leukemic children, right? And these were couples who had children who had leukemia. One thing you know about a child who has leukemia is the child's going to die. You know the life is going to be relatively short. So these people, these couples, would get together in groups and an individual because this is what they wanted to, the tide they wanted to stem. This is what they found out. Whenever there were two parents who were caring for a child, and that child had leukemia, and that child died, as soon as that child died, the odds were 90% that the family was going to break up, that the mother and father were going to divorce. Studying that, they gathered together a group of people to say, look, you are the parents, and here's what's happened. Let's have a group and talk about all the feelings, because here's what happened. And it goes right back to systems theory. When you have a sick child, all of your attention is focused on the sick child, and none of the attention is focused on your relationship with each other. So you look at the sick child. So now the sick child is serving a purpose. Because you're so used to not looking at each other and avoiding each other that the sick child stays to be your focus. Even when the kid feels good, you two are worrying about future treatments because you don't know how to talk to each other anymore. And when the child finally dies, you divorce because you don't even have a relationship except around this sick child. I used to work at a place in Mineola. It's called the Rehabilitation Institute. And I used to work there because it was during my training as an undergraduate student, a graduate student. I was placed out there at Mineola in a place called the Rehabilitation Institute. And the Rehabilitation Institute, great place. My job was to do therapy with the children, with the men and women who were placed there who were mentally disabled, it was called, because they had some kind of problem in their mind. But these were usually young adults. And I would work with them, and I would do some psychotherapy, and I would talk to them, and they would get better. Because I was young, I was energetic, and I was a student. I always look for students like that. In fact, I'm looking for student volunteers who want to work with me on a project, on an administrative project. If anybody knows of a student in psychology or social work, have them get in touch with me at my office. I got some great administrative stuff that'll really help a person who's a student. Anyway, going back to my being a student. Being a student, I would help these children, and you would see these young people, 15, 16, 17 years old, who were really whacked out children. They couldn't control themselves. They would get better. And therapy would help them get better and better and better. And as soon as they got better, the parents invariably pulled them out of the program. It was like so predictable. Ed Newhouse, he used to be the man who ran the program at the time, he used to say, as soon as you get this child better, the family's going to pull him out of program. Because that's what the families did. Because the family was dependent on the child being, you know, dysfunctional. You have a child who's dysfunctional in your family? Is there a dysfunctional member of your family? Part of you has to figure out, how do you depend on their dysfunctionality? What role are you playing in their dysfunctionality? Do you need it? You know, it's like having an alcoholic husband. Do you need your husband to be alcoholic because this way, you know, you feel needed in life? Systems theory says that you can't understand yourself unless you understand yourself in the system, in the very system that you're a part of, and that system includes primarily your first family, your nuclear family, and in addition to that, there are more factors of it, okay? So this is Armand DeMille with you, with a partner of mine, talking about Murray Bowen's family systems theory. Now, there are a thing called triangles that exist in families. We mentioned it. Triangulation is when there are three people in a family, or it could be more, and a triangle is set up. And the triangle is, I am close to you, but I don't like you. So triangles. Son is close to mommy, but he thinks daddy treats mommy bad. Triangle. Triangle. Girl is close to daddy, but she thinks mommy treats daddy bad. Triangle. Triangle. You get your older sister or older brother to be part of something against your dad or your mom. Triangle. Triangle. At work, an employee who says something offhandedly of dissatisfaction about the employer. Triangulation. Gathering. You see triangulation? If you're a boss, you get rid of the person right away. Triangulation is destructive. But it's there, and it becomes a part of the family. And once you're a triangulator, and you know of yourself as a triangulator, you do what you can to stop being in that role in life. How many of you have been in the role of being a triangulee, right? Which is one-third of the triangle in your life. You've been there. You've been negotiating between two people, trying to make peace between two people, trying to be kind to one, not kind to the other, trying to, you know, peacemakers. Then there's another one called the dysfunction of one spouse. Now, in a family system, if one of the spouses are dysfunctional, like if one of them may be neurotic, hysterical, alcoholic, drug addicted, mom or pop, or at work, just dysfunctional. Now you have a system that's built around that parent's dysfunction, and it's part of your system. And how does that affect you in later life? Imagine if you have a mom who has to be protected from the evil alcoholic dad. What kind of friends do you think you form in later life? What would you do if you found yourself attracted to men who drink heavily? You're part of the system. You're always part of the system. In choosing your friendships, ask yourself this question. What family role do I play in my friendships that I always played as a kid? How do I play the same role in my friendships now as I did as a kid? Where is the, like if I have friends who never call me back, right, who never initiate contact, how was I like that as a child? And you'll see that you repeat the very pattern from childhood in your adult friendship relationships. In fact, very often you reiterate your sibling position. If you're the second son, the second child, the third child, you act just like a third child does. You act like the youngest child. You act like the oldest child, according to whatever your sibling position was. You do what's typical. You know, second children are always rebels. First children are always obedient to the parents. You know, the last child always wants to be treated special because they're the baby. Then there is the emotional cutoff. And that's the act of reducing or cutting off emotional contact with a family as a way of managing the family. When a family is under stress and when something threatens to blow, very often one person in the family says, I'm not going to be a part of this anymore. And they step out of the family. And it's like a raging fire. You remove a piece of the flame. You remove a part of it. But that person now being outside the flame, outside the family, and is emotionally cut off, can become the target of the entire family. They now point at Louis, who doesn't want to come around anymore. Did you talk to Louis? No, he didn't call me back. So now all your attention goes to Louis. Louis, meanwhile, is emotionally cut off, and the only way he could be outside the family is to kill himself as a family member. So you become emotionally cut off. Are you an emotional cut off? You ever done that? You ever do that in a relationship where you suddenly, boom, you throw the switch off and you feel nothing ever again? That's emotional cut off. It comes from learning it as a kid.
And that was Mr. Armand DeMille here on The Positive Mind. A little piece from the archives. You could tell it's dated because he was talking about leukemia and the low survival rate and outlook, which has thankfully, fortunately, become a thing of the past. Now, actually, it's very survivable in 90% in some cases. Yeah. So that's again, a clip that we found talking about family systems and roles that people play.
But still relevant, right? I mean, emotional cutoff. I mean, do you do that? Have you done that? He's asking the audience, have you cut yourself off from your family because you just can't take it? You couldn't take it anymore. And it's almost like killing yourself, he says.
Well, because that's such a huge part of our identity. And this family systems theory explains to us that to understand an individual, you really have to look at the greater context within which that individual comes from, yeah. Starting with their family.
Yeah.
Because that is the earliest group that we're a part of, the earliest culture that we inhabit is our family.
Yeah. But what happens when you don't want to understand it? You know, you just want to get away from it. I'm just asking, you know, it's because he's telling us, and Murray Bowen is saying, don't cut yourself off. You might not want to understand it right now, but if you cut yourself off, you're really going to miss a part of yourself. You're going to go through this life not fully knowing who you are or who you could be. So, you know, avoid the emotional cutoff. You might have to take some distance, but don't make it a cutoff because there are a lot of jewels, a lot of gems in being around your family, even if you've changed, even if you're different. You know, there's the old story about everybody comes back from Thanksgiving or, you know, for the Thanksgiving meal and see how they've changed, how everybody else has stayed the same.
Right.
You know, so it's a good marker, this holiday, to see how you've changed, but also maybe measure how you've gotten more distance from your family.
Well, I know there are a lot of people that actually, you know, advocate for cutting off from family.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be one of them, just because I think it is an important link to our past and an important key to understanding ourselves on a psychological level, on a mental level, on an emotional level.
Yeah.
It's important. And I think that there are ways to have responsible relationships with family without completely, you know, cutting off. I think there are ways to maintain a healthy distance and yet still be a part of that. Yeah. And I think that Thanksgiving is important for many people to, you know, who are in that kind of paradigm where there may not be very close to the family, but this is one of the few times of year where they get together, maybe the only time of year.
Right. And to look for maybe the functional part of the family. I mean, you might come from a family, let's say, of all drinkers. And, I mean, this holiday is a chance for everybody to, like, indulge because the next day everybody's off or whatever. And you might have been slowly pulling yourself out of that. And so it's very hard. Certain years are harder than others when you have to endure it and see people you care about really living this dysfunctional life. But you could, you know, you could use it. You can use it. You can use it to try and see the unlived life behind this dysfunction of your family members. You were all kids together at one point, and you were all flowing with each other and playing and, you know, getting along at one point. Something happened in dysfunctional families.
Yes, and I think, Kevin, that understanding these different roles that we're talking about, that yeah. people are occupying, that people are living.
Right.
Understanding these roles is really critical to bringing the compassion to those in our family that will really, I think, help every family
yeah.
live a less dysfunctional existence.
Yeah. Well, we talked a lot during the fun drive about you know, Enneagram personality types, and they're all roles. If you're a two, you're a giver. That's a role. In your family, did you bake the cake? Did you clean the table? I mean, were you mom's helper? And we realized that by doing the fun drive, we realized there's a way to have compassion for people who are filling these roles. And everybody becomes unconscious when they go home to family. You become, you know, everybody comes to the center talking about, when I go back to my house, I'm back being 11 years old again. You know, when I'm around that sibling of mine, I become the underdog again. What is it that they're doing to me, you know? And, you know, we constantly remind that it becomes an unconscious pattern that, you know, isn't there all the time in your life. Just certain people trigger it, and it's safer. Safer to stay unaware, safer to stay unconscious. Everybody else likes you that way. And so you talk about these roles. So you know, when you see the achiever child in the family show up at Thanksgiving, you know, it's not great for them either because they're being pressured to continue to succeed next year. What are you going to show up with?
Yeah, there's a huge amount of pressure there, both external and internal pressure for that role. And I definitely want to talk about that role, both the achiever that was mentioned, right? Armand called it the supreme child, the I'm proud of you kid.
Right.
There's someone playing that role in just about every family.
Sure.
The person who's just, you know, excelling, doing better than everyone else.